This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. This is third official week of retirement. I still don't have all my kind of timings and things down, but I'm getting closer. And this was the first week that I think I can officially say that the work, I don't mean this the wrong way. The work felt like a side issue this week. So it doesn't feel like it's the primary thing I'm doing anymore. So, you know, it was just something, come in, do my best, contribute a little bit, answer a few questions, you know, head on home. And there's been plenty of questions that have been answered, and hopefully some good input that would keep us from making some mistakes. Because there was an interesting thing that happened this week where Microsoft announced, or there was announced for them, I'm not really sure because I wasn't on the front line of this thing, I just got involved in the back end, that SharePoint had a zero-day exploit that no one was aware of that was already out in the wild, and it's a bad one. It's just a bad one. It means you can seize control of that. If you have a SharePoint box that hasn't been patched, you can actually seize control of it and then use that as a beachhead. And in fact, there are reports now of that being used to get into servers and then run the stuff that encrypts all your stuff and charges you money to get it unencrypted. So, I mean, this was a non-trivial issue. But the only thing that we use SharePoint for at this point is the Maps Teams site that handles churches declaring the particulars of the trip they're coming, what type of trip it is, who's going on it, so that we can calculate insurance and that kind of thing. Well, we built that system on SharePoint back in 2013, something like that. And it's been chugging away. There's been some things they wanted to do differently on it. It's been chugging away for years and years, and sometime about 5 years after that, SharePoint was upgraded from 2013 to 2016. Justin Ferez took care of that, but that was pretty much it. And so far, Microsoft has not issued a patch for SharePoint 2016 on-prem. So, you know, that led to discussions about, do we just shut this down? How do we deal with this? Can we do this manually? And the problem with these systems is that when you've run on them for multiple years and you've had personnel come and go and come and go, there's a lot of things behind the scenes that nobody remembers this system is doing because the monkeys are just working away back there. So it was one of those things where there was talk of, oh, we'll just do it with the manual process. And about that point, I put up my hand and I said, if you're going to do that, you really need to handle insurance payments and minutes and volunteer card processing and automatic notifications to go out, you know. So he started going down all the things that had to be done. So, you know, it's useful to have me around. So, and then I actually got some development work done. So, anyways, so that was all fine and dandy. So it was good. It was good. After I left, some of the changes that I had made caused a sniffer to wake up and say, whoa, there's a problem here. But Steve figured out what that was. And the records had my name on it because it was my testing. I was like, oh, yep, sorry, Steve. I forgot that sniffer. This little monkey is sitting out there just waiting for something to go wrong and to go wrong, wrong, wrong. So yeah, we got that cleaned out. And oh well, I forgot about that monkey. Anyway, so all is going well. You know, it's had a good Monday. I've been going out and laying out on the deck in the hot sun. That's a little bit of a challenge, but it's supposed to be really good for you. 15 minutes, just 15 minutes on a side. I was listening to a podcast, and I may have mentioned this last week, that they were talking about those red light masks, infrared light masks that you get that supposedly rejuvenate your skin. And the guy was talking, and he was saying, yeah, they do work. He said, they do work. He said, honestly, he said, if you just get out in the sun, it'll do exactly the same thing. Plus, you get vitamin D from the ultraviolet as well, because God's a good designer. So, yeah. So, I can't say, honestly, that I enjoy laying out in the sun. But the more I do it, the more I grow accustomed to it. And the more I feel like it's beneficial, because I'm laying out when you're going to get the most bang for your buck. So it's mid to late afternoon when I'm laying out, which is when it's hot. And I am sweating like crazy after 15 minutes. So, you know, I'm leaving puddles on the yoga mat. But it, you know, it's good. It's good. Sauna is supposed to be real good for you as well, and you know, it's basically the heat thing. So the guy who was talking about the effect of infrared light, it was interesting because he said that more is not necessarily better. He said you basically just need 15 minutes. That's it. He said you're not, there's not really an increased benefit from what he has seen once you get over 15 minutes. So it's like, hey, this works out. So, you know, I go out 15 minutes on one side, flip over 15 minutes on another side, listen to some YouTube videos, you know, go back, dry off, put some clothes back on, keep on with the day. So I'm liking that. I'm liking that a lot. The writing is going fine. I'm a little behind this week, but I am getting caught up. I'm right in the middle of talking about the parable in this book. And the parable is the wedding feast. The parable of the wedding feast or the wedding banquet. And that, it's interesting. I don't know exactly what I'm going to highlight out of there, but I think the main theme in that is the difference between those who are, what is it? Oh, those for many are invited, I think the scripture says, or many are called. For many are called, but few are chosen. And I think the point of that parable, I think sometimes I've heard people commenting on it and trying to make a big deal about this is the wedding of the Lamb. And, you know, so some people are going to be cast into darkness and some people are going to be saved and some people are going to be lost. And they really focus on the event. But I don't, that's not where I'm going to focus, and I don't know that that's quite what Jesus was saying. In that parable, quite definitely, he is doing it within earshot of Pharisees, and he's making his point that there is a king, and that king has sent servants to you and invited you to come to enjoy his blessing and enjoy his banquets. And you have despised those who have come to give you the invitation. And in some cases, you have murdered them. And then some of you have tried additionally to attend that which you were invited to, but you're not willing to do the work, i.e. a man comes, he is apparently offered wedding garments, and he refuses to wear them. So I think more than just talking about the end times, or more than just talking about accepting of the Messiah, there's a larger context for this parable of God's work in our lives, where he offers us invitations, and it's up to us to decide whether we're going to accept those invitations, or whether we are going to scorn those invitations, or whether or not we're going to pretend like we're accepting the invitations but try to do it in our own way, instead of what God is really looking for. And that is, when he sends out his invitations, he wants us to respond to them with wholeheartedness and with joy, even if we don't necessarily understand all the elements of it, or we don't necessarily think it sounds like something that we want to do. And I think that's the true message of the wedding feast. I mean, but, you know, you can make other, that's the great thing about parables. You can interpret them in many different ways, a very surface level, a little deeper interpretation. But for me, the interpretation of that parable is really about invitation, and really about the mechanisms of response, and the true mechanism that God is looking for, and the fact that that true mechanism of response can show that you are not only called, you are not only invited, but you're chosen. So I'm working on that passage right now. Still working on Mr. Potato Head. That's going fine. I actually got all the pieces for the back printed out, and I got them all put together, and they all fit, and I glued them all together. I did not use quite as much glue on the bottom half of the back piece of Mr. Potato Head as I should have, because that's where the flap is that flaps down to give you access to the back of Mr. Potato Head and storage for parts. And that's just a pressure fit in there. So it has a concave circle in there, and then on the other side it has a convex half sphere, and you know, you just kind of pop it into place. Well, that puts a lot of lateral stress on that shell, the back shell, and it popped open one of my seams. And I think it was because I just didn't have enough glue on it, but I think it's going to be a perpetual problem there. So I just got a bunch of duct tape, and I'm just gonna duct tape the inside of it, and it'll hold, and it'll be fine. I won't have nearly that kind of pressure on the front half, so it should be fine. And so I've got the front half pieces working now. We are gonna spend a little time together this weekend, my wife and I, so I won't be able to print out as many pieces as I'd like this weekend. But hopefully by midweek or so, I'll have all the front pieces printed out, and then I'll start printing all of the other parts, the shoes and the hats and the eyes and the ears, and get all that printed out. And then, while that's happening, I have to figure out how to actually mount the thing on my body. I've got some ideas. I kind of know what I want to do. It's sized correctly. I know that. So, little adventure. It's a little adventure, and but it'll be fun. So that's good. So work is good, writing is good, costumes are good. I was talking to my godson yesterday, and he was telling me a story, and I think he had told it to me before, and I just forgot. He was telling me a story about, yeah, he said, you know, you've kind of gained some notoriety and fame. I said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. He said, I think he was talking to someone who worked in costumes. They made capes at a company that was, you know, made these beautiful ornate capes for costumes and things. And he had mentioned me, and, you know, after she kind of described me, she said, oh, yeah, I know him. I see his stuff on Facebook, you know, so That, and she was working in Boston, so there you go. You know, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, who knows. But it sure is a lot of fun, and it sure does get me into a lot of conversations. And I did Marvin the Martian last week. I survived Marvin the Martian, and everything worked this time. So I could move his eyes, I could make him mad just by pulling some strings, and I could make him not mad, and people got a big kick out of that. So it was good. It was worth doing. And then I had another just very simple, kind of clunky Marvin the Martian costume that I went grocery shopping in. People seem to enjoy it. This week, I'm only going to be in there on Friday, and it's National Bagpipe Day. So that should be fun. Because I have this practice set of bagpipes that is all out of tune. They are terrible. I mean, they sound like multiple animals dying when I blow on this thing. And I got some new reeds for it. They're supposed to be in today. So I'm gonna get them installed here in just a bit, if the package makes it in. And, you know, we'll give this a try. So that'll be fun. And then we'll just keep working on the rest of the stuff. When we're out and about this weekend, I did go ahead and buy practice material for the Star Trek costume, and I'm getting that all put together, and you know, I gotta do some ironing because I washed the fabric and now I need to iron it before I sew it, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, but I'll take the sewing machine with, and you know, I have the pattern for it. We'll start doing some work on that. And yeah, so it'll be fun. It'll be fun, it'll be fun, it'll be fun. Let me get my mail here real quick. So I had actually last week put together notes for what I was going to talk about, and then I got to talking about whatever I talked about last week, and I never got to this. But there is a very fascinating, who knows how predictive it's going to be, there is a very fascinating website called AI-2027.com. And the researcher, the main researcher on this, used to work for, I just ran over something, used to work for OpenAI. And he actually quit OpenAI because he didn't feel like they were paying close enough attention to the potentials of this whole thing going south. And because he didn't feel like they were, you know, paying close enough attention to the safety issues, he went ahead and resigned. Well, he has performed a bunch of research, a bunch of estimations, a bunch of, you know, looking at facts and figures and speculating and like that and like that and like that. And it's very interesting. It's just very interesting. And they map out their best guess of what's coming over the next 2 years. And it's pretty interesting. It's just pretty interesting. So, oh, hang on a minute. I'm threading a fine line when I back into my garage because if I'm too far on one side, I run into things. If I'm too far on the other side, I can't really get out of my door. So I'm going to try this one more time. That's better. Anyways, so yeah, it's really quite interesting. And just to kind of give you the highlights, I printed out the report. It turned out to be 37 pages from the website. And it's all just on the website up for free. So they wrote this scenario. They think by mid-2025, you're going to have stumbling agents. So you're going to have AI agents that can go out and sweep the web and do things, et cetera, et cetera. They think by late 2025... there's going to be the most expensive ever AI, and they just have names for it that they just make up because they say, you know, we don't, there's multiple people in this space, and you know, we're just gonna name it this generic thing. So they're saying, and we've got a lot of coding automation right now, but they're saying by early 2026, we'll probably have coding automation. And that's one of the big bets, because we're going to get AIs that can code far faster than humans can, or they can look at human code and decipher it, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So they're expecting 2026 that China will get close to an AGI. And late 2026, that at that point, they're saying that they expect that the AI really will start taking over jobs. There's been a lot of hype about that now, but, you know, and they're expecting the military, of course, to get in touch with these AI things and et cetera, et cetera. So then they're expecting by about January of 2027 that you'll end up with an agent that they're calling Agent 2 in this thing that never finishes learning, that it's constantly going out. And then they expect probably China is going to steal Agent 2, which, you know, that's probably a pretty good bet. And then there'll be some algorithmic breakthroughs in March, and then other agents will be aligned. And this is basically where you get into the point where the AIs start building AIs. And of course, the United States will see national security threats in these things, and so they're going to start refining and restricting access, those type of things. And then once you hit the self-improving AGI, at that point, it's just going to start, you know. So you'll be able to get cheap remote workers. And then, of course, you're going to have this huge competition between China and the U.S. And honestly, I heard somebody else say something that made a lot of sense. Once we have robotics, and the robots can work just as cheaply in China as they can in the U.S., it doesn't make any sense for businesses to go overseas any longer, because the labor is just as cheap. Then they're expecting by about September 2027 to have the first superhuman AI, you know, and then the government's going to try to control it. And then you get to the end of all this stuff and, you know, potentially see the rise of super AI politicking, where the AI is releasing stuff on websites and trying to convince people to vote for certain politicians because those politicians are more friendly towards the AI, and blah, 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 blah. But suffice it to say, you get down to the bottom of all this and there's two buttons. There's for like a optimistic future or a not so optimistic future. And basically the not so optimistic future is AI kills us all. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I did have a weird thought about that, if it's true that AI is going to grow to the place that it may try to kill us all, I think that's about the time when prophecies start need to be coming true and Jesus just needs to come back, because I don't know that we're going to be able to fight against this. So, you know, exciting days are ahead. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.